Nighttime on Still Waters. This is NB506812, narrowcasting into the night from somewhere on Britain's waterways. December 16th, Wednesday. Venus hangs above Bearley Lock, a hard diamante stud puncturing the smooth bowl of lacquered blues and Satsuma orange fire at the rim. We stand beside the pool eroded by the summer-pastured cows. The water looks like spilt Indian ink that would go on forever and ever. Penny sniffs at the torn soil, and a lone duck slips into the air. Later today, that lacquered bowl will become roughened and dulled, and rain will whip and pit the mirrored smoothness of this water. But that is later. This is now. And we are both absorbed in our own worlds. This is Narrowboat 506812, coming to you canalside on the back of a hectoring southerly wind. Welcome aboard. You join me on a really stormy night, but the hatches are all battened, the mooring ropes checked, the stows are lit and glowing, and we're all snug and dry here tonight. Actually, we don't really need to have the stove on tonight. We've had a couple of really mild days. There's been a series of lows that have dragged air flows that have been warmed by oceans and land over the country recently, and there's a particularly deep Atlantic low that's now winding up a lot of weather for us, hence the battering winds and the drenching squally rains. And actually, a while back, one of Nancy's questions was, how do I check the weather and get info on it? Do we have a television? And what communications do we have? So it's probably as good a time as any to answer them. First of all, no, we don't have a television. But that's nothing new. We haven't had one for well over 30 years now. The one we did have blew up just after we were married, and at the time we couldn't really afford to replace it, and then when we couldn't be bothered to replace it, and subsequently we still haven't been bothered to replace it. So, no, we don't have a television, but that's not because we're on a boat, that's just because we're not that bothered with it. We do have a radio, or actually a couple of radios, but to be honest, we don't really use them either. It feels a bit like an intrusion. I have to admit, I'm a bit surprised by it, because I'd always thought when we were planning the move that that was one of the must-haves. In the house, we always had the radio on, and it was always filled with music. And I love music and conversation, and so does Donna, and I also love radio as a medium, hence partly what I'm doing here now, at least how these podcasts are formatted. However, strangely, the radio itself, it just doesn't really sort of fit into our day-to-day lives. And I guess it's partly really the reason for making the move that we did, to aim to live a little closer to the environment and to be aware of the shifts in soundscapes of day and seasons. I suspect if we were in a more urban location, then perhaps I'd put the radio on more. But I just love listening to the rooks going over, and during the day the squabbles and the chatter between the ducks and coots and moorhens and the songbirds, and particularly in the early autumn the geese flying over. So the radio is not even really a source of information either. However, we do obviously have the internet, and that's where we get most of our information from. Just recently, we also moved into the 21st century and got some smartphones, but to be honest, we're still trying to work out how to use them. I have a number of weather-related apps on my tablet. The Met Office, which is great for updates, particular warnings. The Weather Channel, which I always used to live by. However, around here I've noticed that it's actually not quite so accurate. And I think that might be because where we are at the moment has its own microclimate. So although it has an excellent service, don't tend to use it that much. I also use Daft Moon, which is a wonderful little app and gives loads of information on the moon and the sun and the planets. And I also use another excellent site called Windy, which again gives right up to the minute information on weather systems and charts those weather systems. The main source of information and my primary data source is an app called the Weather Station, which links me to a weather station a few miles up the road from where we are at the moment. And I also have a little weather station here on board the Erika. And if you've seen the photographs of the study wall, you may have noticed it there. It records barometric pressure, etc., and also outside and inside temperatures. The outside temperature is not screened and therefore tends to read a little high in summer and a little low in winter, so it's not terribly accurate. However, it gives us enough of a rough idea of the conditions outside and prepares us for icy or frosty weather outside. And while we're on the subject of weather, Alistair Anderson, a friend of mine from years back, asked me, what does skycasting that I finished the weather log with mean? He'd apparently been looking on Google and couldn't come up with any answers. It's a good question, and I admit it's a bit of an indulgence of mine, or a bit of an oddity. It's an old Scottish term that I found in a book published in around about 1900, called The Weather Folklore of the Sea, or The Superstitions of the Scottish Fishermen. It's a lovely book full of sort of arcanisms and little bits of information. And skycasting is mentioned there as the term used by the fishermen of Petuli and Roseharty in that area on the east coast of Scotland. And it's used to describe daybreak, or that period around daybreak, so just before and at sunrise. And I just fell in love with the term and thought I will use it instead of just saying sunrise. Well, as we're coming up to Christmas and the nights are long, I thought I would do something a bit different tonight and read an extract from Mum's book describing life on a boat during the harsh winter of 1962-63. For those who have heard episode 2, you'll know the story behind why we named the boat Erika after my mum, and how she loved the time where we lived on the boat on the canal and where I was born. I plan next year to read her memories of her time on the boat, and because I think you'll find it interesting, and it describes beautifully life aboard a boat on the Grand Union Canal 60 or so years ago, just when canal life was moving from working to a more residential and leisure era. The Cathy was a wooden-built ship's lifeboat, and at the time, they were quite often converted for holiday and residential use. At this point, I was not born. Mum and Dad had Wendy, who I think was probably round about one or two, and they'd been looking for a boat for some time. Mum describes her purchase in this way. Then we saw an advertisement for a ship's lifeboat for sale. This was being used as a holiday cruiser on the Thames. They are 30 foot in length, which is a good size, and were popular as living boats. We had to get to a mooring on the Thames just below Staines, where we were to meet the owner, and he would show us over it. We met up without difficulty and were taken down a narrow winding path, much overgrown, and we finally came to the boat. It hadn't been moved for a long time, in spite of having an engine, judging by the growth of weed on the hull. The boat consisted of a large cabin, the greater part with good headroom, but it lowered in the forepart. The converted car engine was also housed in the cabin, which was concealed by a wooden cover. The toilet compartment was in the extreme fore end. There was an open cockpit. The boat was sound as far as we could tell, and although it would need quite a lot of structural alterations, we could live in it straight away. It seemed that at last we had found our new home. The price, £180, was about right, so we handed over the money and became the proud owners of the Cathy. They subsequently took the Cathy up the Grand Union Canal to Batchworth in Rickmansworth, where they moored at Hampton Hall Farm, which is a small farm at the time farmed by Frank Chapman and his wife Helen, who had a daughter Jane, who was born roughly about the same time that I was. And their farm adjoined the canal and already had a number of residential moorings there. And fortunately, there was a free spot for Mum and Dad and Wendy. The particular section of Mum's book that I want to read relates to the very harsh winter of 1962 and 1963. And in her book, Mum had just been relating about how the challenges of living in a boat sometimes resulted in Dad sometimes being late for work. And she writes, "Another time Mick, that's my dad, was late for work was during our last winter on the boat, which was the winter of 1962-63. It was the worst winter we'd had for several years. There was a lot of snow with a continuous hoarfrost on top. The canal was completely frozen. I still aired all the washing over the Beatrice heater in the galley. The heater was always on until we went to bed, and in the morning we awoke to a fresh layer of snow, and when Mick was ready to leave for work, we found that we could not open the door. It was stuck fast. My airing had caused the snow to melt on the warm galley roof, and the melted water had dripped down on the sides of the boat into the grooves that the sliding door ran along. It was now frozen solid. We lit the pressurized bowl fire and trained the heat onto the door, hoping that the heat would penetrate through and melt the ice. But then the fire ran out of paraffin, and the spare paraffin was always kept outside. So there was nothing for it but to wait until the boat warmed up generally, and by working at the door we at last managed to get it open, but not before mid-morning." And so, once again, Mick had an original excuse for not getting to work on time. The Calagas bottles were also kept outside on the decking, just near the galley window, and when it was really cold, we would have to pour hot water over the regulator before the gas would get through. Fortunately, we always had plenty of hot water from the little tank behind the fire. During that same winter, we had a day of freezing rain so that every branch and twig was covered in ice, and the ground was like a skating rink. We had a delivery of anthracite that morning, and I marvelled at how the coalman kept his balance with a heavy sack on his back and managed not to slip into the canal. Because later that day it was our turn to venture out, Richard in his pram, Wendy walking beside me, we tried to get up the farm track, but it was hopeless, for each step forward we slid two back. I could just about manage on my own, but not pushing a pram as well. Fortunately, Helen Chapman was at home, and she was only too pleased to look after Wendy and Richard, as she had Jane there as well. I managed to get into the town and was very relieved when Frank, that's Helen's husband, stopped and offered me a lift home in the car, as I doubt if I could have been able to get back down that farm track laden with shopping. When Mick came home later from work, he found it almost impossible to walk down the track. During that winter, we had more friends than ever dropping in to see us, as they said that our boat was the warmest place to be in, far warmer than a house, which we ourselves found to be true when we eventually left the boat. The anthracite stove gave out so much heat that everything was completely warmed through, even our bedding was warm. We never needed a hot water bottle, and there was no draughts to cope with. One day, Mick had brought home a hare, which one of the young chaps at work had shot. We decided to get the butcher to hang it and cut it up for us. So, next day, Wendy, Richard and I staggered into Rickmansworth with it. I laid it over the foot of the pram, but it was so large that the head was almost on the ground one side, while the feet trailed the other. When I picked it up at the end of the week, I was astonished at the large amount there was of it. In fact, we gave over half of it away, and there was still almost too much. Mick felt that we all should jug it, and went shopping, coming back with some rough cider, in which I proceeded to cook some of it. Whether it was because it had been cooked in rough cider, or just the richness of the hare itself, we don't know, but Mick didn't feel at all well the next day. Wendy and I suffered no ill effects, but Mick couldn't face any more of it. Very often, when the Chapmans had a party and there was any food left over, Helen would come around with some of it, and that very morning she had brought us some leftover sausage rolls. And as Mick didn't want any more hare, he suggested that he had the sausage rolls for his lunch. But when I went to get them, I couldn't find them anywhere. I hunted high and low, and I then started looking in all the unlikely places, and eventually found them in the dustbin. I only hoped that I hadn't put them in there, as I was actually thanking Helen for them. That is so mum. Oh, thank you very much, dear. Very kind of you. As she puts them straight in the bin. As they were still there in the paper bag, Mick had them for his lunch and thoroughly enjoyed them. And again, so mum. Poor old Donna must have wondered what she was marrying into our family. But that's Mum's account of the winter of 1962-1963, living aboard the Cathy. We do have some photographs of this time, and there's a couple of really lovely ones of Wendy building a snowman just outside the boat. But unfortunately, they're really small, and that means that the quality when we put them on the internet is quite often not very good. So we are working on it. And I do aim to upload the photographs that we do have and are usable on the Facebook, Instagram and Twitter pages that are associated with this podcast. The details and links are in the episode notes below. So all that leaves me to do is just to sign off and wish you a very, very, very good and peaceful night. Good night. Temperature outside, 11.4 degrees. Temperature inside, 26 degrees. Humidity, 93%. Dew point, 10.4 degrees. Wind direction, south. Wind strength, 23 miles per hour. Barometric pressure, 998.6, falling. Precipitation, 3 millimeters. Moon phase, 21.6%, waxing crescent. Sunset, 15:55. Day length, 7 hours, 44 minutes. Skycasting 813.